You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Nina Kauser Show. Oh my god, a home win. It seems like an age. It probably is an age. I can't stop smiling. You know, it's the simple things, things that I took for granted. I think things that we all took for granted, but absolutely loved that. Wasn't probably the best performance, but I'll take 3 points. I'll take a goal off, you know, Philip's arse at that point, literally. So delighted with that one. This show is brought to you by Liberty Shield, where you get all your entertainment needs sorted. They've got a load of, they cover all the apps as well, Amazon Fire Stick, Mac and Windows. And, you know, they have a discount code, a brand new discount code, actually. So let me give that to you now. You get a massive 25% off using the AI Pro code 2021. So there you have it, guys. Right, 2-1, it finished. Let me get to my guests. I am so excited for this one. I have two incredible guests, Ying and Yang. This is going to be so much fun. I'm going to introduce the familiar voice first. It's been a while, but he's back on. It's Sam Evans. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Nina. Smooth intro as always there. Love that.
Shut up! You know what? I'm just trying to level up the Liverpool season with my intros.
Well, you know, I think I'd have been the same as you there, because when that Trent goal went in, I went absolutely ballistic. I lost my shit there just now. I think it's just a build-up of like 4 months of frustration.
Mm.
And just, I feel like that's a massive, massive weight off for this team now. After such a long, long run, unbeaten at home, and then we can't buy a win. I just think that's going to be so big for us and just for me mentally, because it's been bloody hard watching this team at home recently. So yeah, really, really happy now, Nina.
Absolutely. And you know what? Drum roll. I have nothing to bang on. Okay, I've got a bit of a desk. Let me just do that. Right. It is somebody that I have not spoken to in forever. He was a familiar voice on the Nina Kauser Show. I loved working with him. And you know what? He is so adored and so respected. It is the excellent John Buskell. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Nina. You don't know how much I'm smiling. It's so lovely to be on the show. And what a great result.
You know what? I actually reached out to you, didn't I? Because we were trying to sort this out. And I was like, I just hope we win, you know, to mark the occasion, because I've not spoken to you in such a long time and I do not want to be miserable.
No, exactly. And I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about it after the VAR decision. I just put my head in my hands. But thankfully, we got the right result in the end.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, guys. I think we're all happy. We've got a couple of callers as well, which is really, really good. I'm going to go to our first caller. Again, a familiar voice on the Nina Kauser Show, but I've not spoken to him in ages. I think everyone's just kind of been avoiding each other during, you know, this very, very, very bad period of being a Liverpool supporter. But a massive warm welcome to Pip. Pip, welcome back.
How are you doing? Are you all right?
You know what? I'm just so happy we won. You know when you're just relieved? You're just like, and Breathe. Yeah. It's one of them.
What it is, I couldn't come on when we were losing. I couldn't do it because this team doesn't deserve a rant. You can't really rant and rave about this team for the joy that they've given us over the last 4 years. So I couldn't. When we were on a loop, I couldn't come on. This team does not deserve a rant because the happiness that it's given us is been immense. But we needed this win today. Mm. Biggest win of the season by far. We needed it because it was a sort of thing where in terms of the offside goal, and it was like a combination of weeks and weeks of just bad luck. And I felt if we lost this game and the Salah chance that he missed, and it was just frustrating. That it was one of the most frustrating games I've ever witnessed. And Alisson, the way he let that in, but Alisson needs our support. I don't know what we need to do. I think we need to spam his Instagram and just say we love you because he needs it because it's been a terrible time for him, really. So I don't think Alisson deserves any criticism because of what he's gone through. And any of us that couldn't go to our father's funeral, it would really hurt you. So I don't Absolutely. Think he deserves any criticism at all. I think he just deserves a bit of love.
Mm.
And it's a sort of thing when we needed this. And Trent as well needed that goal. He needed that goal because that Real Madrid game shattered him. That was his game to really prove that he needed to be in England, and he fluffed it really. But for him to come back as he did today, brilliant, shows brilliant mental strength, brilliant performance, really happy. I'm just so glad. And the question I really really want to ask is when Mane come on, like he was just devoid of anything really, and I'm just really really worried about Mane, really really worried about him. He couldn't pass for anything, but he needs our love as well. I don't know what we can do because we're just not in a stadium to really cheer these. They need us. I've never known a team as much as this team to need a crowd. They need Mane needs his song, Salah needs his song, Alisson needs his song. All these players need us. And this is such a shame because I know for a fact, if we were at that stadium against Real Madrid, we're going through. But it's just the fact that this team needs us. And I don't know what to do. They need us. But I don't know. That was my question, Mane. What can we do with Mane? Because it was one of the worst cameos I've seen, really. Him coming on, it was really, really bad. But we got the win anyway. But this team needs a lift. How can we lift this team? I don't know. Are we going to do a coach, a social distance welcome for the coach coming in from Madrid? I don't know what to do, but yeah, that's my point.
Really, really good point. I think it was something that Klopp alluded to in his presser as well. And John, you know what? I've not spoke, you know, because you've not been on the pod, you know, for quite some time. I'm going to come to you first on the whole Sadio Mane conundrum because you know he's looked a little off since you know, for a couple of months now when I think he got diagnosed with COVID and stuff and he's not looked like himself. And it's a stark contrast to the player that he was last season. He was literally the man last season. And, you know, people just kind of spoken about his cameo there and he wasn't quite effective. And, you know, you're sat there and then you're looking at Shaqiri, which, by the way, I hate those late subs. I think they're utterly pointless, but had some involvement at the very end, even put Sadio Mane in at the end. And, you know, what is going on with Sadio Mane? Because he was utterly dreadful for the entire Real Madrid game as well. I was quite surprised that he actually wasn't hooked.
I think my heart goes out to Sadio Mane. He's a young guy. I'm speaking as someone who's 51, and he is a young guy. And you know,
still
he's
young, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. But you know, he's in a foreign city. He's had a lot of people supporting him. You know, as in the ground, celebrating him. He's been, you know, fantastic. And then you get a season like this when you can't live your life as you're used to. And of course, there's the minutiae of the media, everyone looking at everything that you're doing. And we've seen it for the whole team. And now at the moment, it seems that the spyglass has turned on Mane. For suddenly, we're all talking about how poor his form is. And I have to say, I was really pleased the final whistle went a second after he missed that chance when he was one-on-one with the keeper. Because if the commentary had kept on going, then we start mulling over Mane's miss, Mane's miss, whereas I think it will just get forgotten completely. what do we do to get him back into the tiger that he was last season? You know, he was just phenomenal last season, dragging us to the title, I felt at times. I don't know. I mean, a club like Liverpool is going to have professional psychologists available. It's got winners around the club. And I would have thought that they're all pulling in the right direction, but it must come from within the club itself, a sense of belief, a sense of we can still do things. We are close to top four. We can still go through against Real Madrid. And Klopp is the kind of manager that shows belief in guys that really try. It only takes a second for things to change, for a goal to go in. And I'm sure we'll get Mane back. What can we do? We can only be vocal and send good, you know, send positive thoughts. But I think we shouldn't listen to the negativity. We just keep believing in what this guy is doing. He's a phenomenal footballer. Form, you know, class is there. Class is permanent. Form can change in a second.
Well, you know what, Sam? I'm going to come to you now. It's quite philosophical from John Buskell. You know, measures it in quite nicely. I mean, for me, it's not even the fact that it's the goal scoring. It's the simple things, like, you know, things that, you know, Sadio Mane is notorious for. You know, like the way he kind of shrugs off defenders and beats them with their physicality. You know, that was his, like, that's his signature move. You know, being an absolute brute force in the air, you know, an absolute danger on set pieces. And it's those kind of things that are kind of missing from his game as well. Like last season, they kind of shared the whole, you know, the whole goal scoring thing. I mean, I go back, two would have a great game and one would have an off day and it'd be absolutely fine because two would carry Liverpool over the finish line. And this season, that's not quite happened for him. Even the stuff that he's notorious for, it's just not working for him. I mean, is it a case of maybe he's just somebody who is just really, really exhausted?
Yeah, before I get on to that, just to give John a bit of a warning that Nina's always very superstitious about Liverpool games, and he often blames, like, me and Dave Horrocks, for example, if Liverpool lose and we're on the pod, it's our fault somehow. So she's now going to be relentlessly asking you to come on every pod because you've been the lucky charm today, John, and you brought that home win to Anfield.
No, but John needs to be enlightened here because Sam was like, we don't win, we don't lose when I'm on this pod. Yeah. And he had so much swagger and arrogance about him and then everything just fell apart and then that was it. Yeah. He was on target for me then. That was it.
I've had a Sadio Mane-esque run on the pods with some of the results recently. It's been terrible. So I have gone well with Liverpool. But I got to agree, you know, with Mane, it's difficult to put your finger on it. I totally agree with John. He's not finished. He's an incredible footballer. He's one of my favourite players we've ever had. I absolutely love the guy. He's just going through a tough time. And it seems, much like Pip made some great points, by the way, about Liverpool and the confidence thing that seems to have been drained out of us at Anfield and we just can't seem to buy a win and everything. I'm hoping, a bit like Mane, getting the win today now will really be a big boost for the club in general. I think they just felt it hanging over them and, you know, everything was going to the usual script today. You know, we had a terrible VAR decision today. We had some really horrific finishing by us where Villa were really trying to give us a goal almost. They gave the ball away so many times in their own third and we'd be really, really wasteful. We had a disallowed goal chucked into there. We had a goalkeeping error gifting the opposition a goal. It was just all going to the usual script that it's been going this season so far. And I think every one of us was watching going, not again, I can't believe this. And I think the players have been feeling it as well. And they're all a bit kind of looking around going, starting to believe that it's a jinx or something. I don't know. It's, psychologically, Klopp is fantastic at riding on a crest of a wave. When the team's on and up, he really is a bit of a momentum manager, and once we get going and get confident, we're just a machine and we're just relentless and can't stop. But the problem is when things start to go wrong, it can fall apart quite spectacularly. And that's what we've been seeing recently, unfortunately, with lots of, you know, we've gone over the reasons why. So, yeah, I'm just hoping now this is going to be the catalyst. It's a big, big win, not just for our chances of trying to squeeze out a top four finish, but I'm hoping that might be a big weight off their backs now, ready for the second leg against Real Madrid. And obviously we're home again. We've got the home win under our belt now. That's out the way. All about trying to beat Real Madrid at home now on Wednesday.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think it goes without saying we all absolutely love and adore Sadio Mane. And I think, I mean, I'll let Pip have a final say on this as well. I think, you know, the panel have made some excellent points there. But Pip, I'll bring you in as well. I think what as well doesn't help is the fact that the only striker that's really looked on it, and, you know, remember Jota's been injured for a big portion of this season and he looked really good and he's come back and he's, you know, he did really well for Portugal and obviously scored last weekend. But I think what the problem we have here is the only one that looks like he's any kind of threat in front of goal is Mo Salah. So therefore, maybe it's like a kind of added pressure that they're putting on themselves. Even Bobby Firmino, I mean, today he was doing the things, you know, he didn't score, he scored a disallowed goal, but he looked like he was kind of finding himself and that rested him a world of good. And I feel like the strikers, that's been one of our problems. We've conceded a lot of goals, but we've not scored a goal in open play in Anfield. And I think it was the Mo Salah goal that was, I don't even know the stat, but basically we have been shocking and our front men haven't looked great at home either.
I love that as a stat, Nina. The stat is we have been shocking. Just comes up on the bottom on Sky Sports on the bar. Liverpool have been shocking in 2021.
Well, I did tell Gags if he wants to do pressing stats, you know, such a player pressed a lot. You know, those are my stats. We don't do numbers. So has Pip left us?
Yeah, no, I'm here. What it is that in terms of you, the guest made a tremendous point, really, in terms of I just feel that the last three seasons, what got us out of sticky situations? If you look at the stats, the last three seasons, we were demons when it came to set pieces. And this season, right? When I'm seeing a set piece, I just know nothing's happening of it. And I think that's a major thing this season, because set pieces get you out of sticky situations.
Mm.
The amount of times that Van Dijk came up, Bayern Munich away, who came up and put that set piece in. So many times Van Dijk's come up, bang, puts his head on it. He wants it. And at the moment, we don't have anything money that wants it in a box, really. Nobody wants to put their head where it is. So that's a major point, because when I remember so many times last season, we needed a goal. A random person will come up and just head the ball in the net from a set piece. It was such a staple for Liverpool, the amount of goals we saw from a set piece, but we don't have that anymore. No, I don't know the last time we even scored from a set piece. We're just not doing anything from set pieces. And that's a major thing as well for me. And that's something that really is has added pressure to, like you've said, to Salah. But that was my final point, really, in terms of around set pieces and that how that's added the pressure to our front three as well. Because without that, it's just another way of scoring, really. And that's my point.
No, it was absolutely wonderful. Well, it was great to hear from you again, Pip. And you know what? You can enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Nina. See you later.
Take care. Thank you, Pip. That was Pip kicking this show off, talking about Sadio Mane and making a load of excellent points, which we will cover throughout the show. We're going to move on to our second caller, who I believe will have the correct stat for me, because clearly someone does their homework. It's a familiar voice again. It's Yona. Welcome back.
Hey, Nina. How are you doing?
I'm happy, I'm delighted, but please, by all means, correct me with this stat. And
I don't know the exact stat, but I just know it's like 750 plus minutes, which is like 12 and a half hours, maybe 13, without a goal from open play at Anfield. But that's not what I wanted to say. I wanted to start off with appreciation for Trent. Thank God. Thank fucking God. And now I want to be a party pooper a bit. So I've got a bit of a problem with Genie lately. He's been holding up the play and not progressing the attack, which I know is kind of his job, but I'm getting tired of it. I'd like someone like Naby to come in and progress the attack more. And I want to hear your thoughts about that.
That's a really, really good question. I think, again, he was a player that was under a bit of scrutiny. And Sam, I'll come to you first. Because, again, you know, I thought Naby, Yona just mentioned there, Naby Keita, and of course he got hooked against Real Madrid and obviously didn't feature in this game. Ginny was equally poor in that game, in my opinion. Just going to put it out there. Thought we were all pretty bad that game, actually. It was pretty disgusting. But in this game, again, he looks tired. Make no mistake about it. But can we maybe factor in, I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well. I'm looking at these Ginny performances and I'm looking at the midfield combination where he's, you know, been playing. Against Real Madrid, it was Naby Keita who had a poor game and then Fabinho who was a holding player. Ginny Wijnaldum in this game, James Milner who's aging himself, and Fabinho who's the holding midfielder. Is it just a case of a player being tired and looking out of form, or can we maybe factor in the fact that it's not maybe a like, you know, the likes of a Thiago or a fully fledged, confident Naby Keita to kind of help him in that role, or his usual partner in a Jordan Henderson? Are these factors that maybe we should consider when we're talking about Ginny Wijnaldum and his performances?
Yeah, we definitely need to, first of all, caveat everything we're saying about anyone's form with the situation we're in at the moment. And I found it today again quite a bit where with the two centre-backs that we've got in there, they've done a great job filling in recently, and they're now our longest serving centre-back partnership of the season, and they've only played about six games together or something ridiculous. But what I find is we're really struggling to get any sort of play out from the back. The teams are starting to press us quite high up, and I'm finding the midfielder therefore getting quite poor possession and possession facing back to their own goal, and they're struggling to get out quite a bit because we're not managing that. The centre backs can't relieve the pressure like the likes of Van Dijk and Gomez can with their kind of passing, and even Matip from the back.
Yeah, and the high so line as well, which was a massive help as well, which made the midfield a bit more progressive. Yeah,
exactly. So we need to remember the fact that they're dealing with a different setup now. With the two we've had absolute elite centre backs with ridiculous pace, which has allowed us to play so high up, and their distribution is good. I think that probably helps the central three a lot. So it's been a very tough season for whoever's played in midfield this season, especially since we started losing again. So one thing I'll say about Wijnaldum, I definitely do agree that his form has dropped off quite a bit, but he's been one of our most consistent players, and his availability for this team is unrivaled, really. He's up there with the most minutes of any player over the last 4 or 5 years, I think. He's always available for this team, and he always puts in a shift. There has been a concern recently. He's been giving the ball away very kind of carelessly, but it seems to be contagious. It's not just him. That's the thing. You know, in a season when we're pinpoint one, so Fabinho was great today, but he did it a couple of times as well. Same thing against Real Madrid. We were really sloppy. And I can only put it down to confidence. I don't know what else it could possibly be because, you know, we're still dominating games. We still absolutely dominated the game today, but we've ended up just scraping a win. And the only thing I can put that down to is to do with confidence. And our confidence, when we're on the ball, when your confidence is down, that split-second decision takes that little bit longer. And then you don't make the right decision, or you take one too many touches, lose the ball. I just think it's confidence, confidence, confidence. And it's something that's been battered out of us with this tough season with so many factors going against us. Plus, we finally got the league win last season off our backs as well. So there's a big relief there, and the intensity was bound to drop. Let's hope now we've turned a few corners this season and it's been a bit of a false dawn. Let's hope today's result really is a big turning point for us and we can kind of start firing now going into the end of the season.
Here's hoping. And John, I'll come to you. Can you weigh in on the Gini Wijnaldum conundrum as well? I mean, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you make of the play. I think Sam's hit the nail on the head. You know what? Availability is, especially in the season that we've had, you know, he's just been available and he's always pretty much delivered. But recently he has looked a little off. I mean, I'd like to get your thoughts because I don't care what anyone says. He's an absolute machine, but to me, he looks really tired.
Yeah, for me, Gini is an absolute legend. And I was thinking about his performance the other night because, I mean, obviously he didn't play well. I think the thing is, you know, we talk about the number of captains in the club. We've got, you know, Jordan Henderson, you've got Virgil van Dijk, you've got Milner and Gini Wijnaldum, who are, you know, supposedly this sort of, you know, captain club behind the scenes. And, you know, I was thinking, as Gini Wijnaldum goes out on, you know, the other night in the Champions League, we're under huge pressure. It's most likely for us to get into the Champions League next season, which we are desperate to do. If we actually win the Champions League, he's the captain. He's used to having Hendo, Milner, Virgil van Dijk around him, who are also captain-like figures. There you are with the responsibility of leading your team. No matter what kind of professional you are, I'm sure he will have felt that I'm the captain. I'm leading us through this. And suddenly, you know, the rest of the team are playing abysmally as well. And I think it's only human nature that you start to look at around everyone and want to jivvy them around. He's not just concentrating on his own game. So when I saw his performance the other night, I really felt that he was possibly, we talk about someone weighed down by the shirt, but he was also weighed down by the captaincy within the context of a season that has been so bad as this, where the pressure for us to deliver is huge, where the pressure for him to deliver is huge. His performance today wasn't fantastic. I do think, you know, he's run a lot of kilometers in his career and, you know, he's late in his career. I think he's been freed when he's been playing for the Netherlands. When he's been captaining the Netherlands in the absence of Van Dijk, he's played phenomenally, but he plays a much more offensive role there.
Yep.
Where he's not carrying a midfield. And I felt without Thiago today around him, the midfield wasn't functioning as well. So I felt his performances of late haven't been as great, but I make a lot of caveats really for what he's been doing, given this context of what's happening. And you know, I think he's phenomenal. I think the one thing I wanted to remind folks about is that Gini Wijnaldum came off the bench after a lot of criticism, you know, and scored those great goals against Barcelona. Gini Wijnaldum is a winner and he will do whatever it takes to make sure Liverpool win.
I like it. Well, Yona, I'll come back to you. Let's let you have the final say on Gini Wijnaldum, and then we will move off. What are your thoughts on, in terms of what the panel have said? I mean, they've kind of taken everything into consideration with his performance.
Yeah, I definitely agree. He's been class for the last, 4 years? I don't even know. He's been class and available is the key word. He's played at one point the most amount of minutes, I think. He is available, but he is tired as well. I think so, at least. I don't know, but I think he should get a rest. Maybe Kess should come in as well. But he'll be back and stronger than ever.
Absolutely. Well, Yona, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Have a good one, lads.
Thank you. Bye. Okay. Bye. That was Yona, our second caller. Now it's just myself and the panel. If anyone wants to call in, drop us a message. We can certainly get you one and sort something out. Okay, I have a question here from Nigel. And John, I'll come to you first on this one. Because for me, even though Liverpool won and I was dead happy, I mean, let me just kind of... I thought we started off pretty well. I felt like we saw a lot of the ball. We created a lot of chances. And then they scored. We were quite wasteful. And it went to go and show that they have, you know, they have this chance and they score. And you're kind of sat there scratching your head at what we kind of did in the first half. But we equalise and for me, I thought we looked pretty dreadful after that. I thought, you know, for a big portion of that second half, we didn't look our best. And Nigel actually has a question here. And it's basically, is it me or are we giving up the ball too much and moving too slow? What's the panel's opinion on this? And I felt like we did the exact same against Real Madrid as well. I have no idea why we tried matching them at their pace when we know they are the masters at that, at sucking the life out of the game. We need to up the ante, not decrease it.
Yeah, I think what I came away, I got so frustrated because it's almost like the second there is a knockback, their heads go completely. You can almost see it. It's like a sense of panic, a sense of.
It's a stark contrast from last season as well, isn't it? Where
absolutely
we were a goal behind a fair few times, but there was just the arrogance about them, like, no, and we would get last minute winners.
Yeah, there was that sense of absolute swagger last year, you know, that we're going to win. We weren't even that fast starting out of the block last season. It was almost sometimes, you know, we had that attitude of we're going to score. We're going to wear opponents down. It was, you know, it was like a Liverpool of the 70s and the 80s. And now it seems we've almost gone back to a Liverpool of the Roy Evans era where, we're fantastic when we're in the ascendancy. And the slightest thing goes wrong, we lose our heads completely. I thought my big takeaway from the match is that if I play for Real Madrid, if I'm a Real Madrid fan, what I saw from this game is that Liverpool put themselves back as winners. No matter what, in spite of the wobble, in spite of the panic, that they managed to drag themselves over the line. And that's the one thing they'll take away with them. That sense of swagger was there. You know, Trent puffs out his chest. And that's exactly what we needed because too much lately, we lose our heads, something goes against us, and we can't brush it off. And I think that's understandable. But I hope that we can take that sense of swagger and it's into the next game.
Yeah, we definitely need something. I think for me, the most important thing is the belief. They have to believe because there's no fans to cheer them on. Sam, I'm going to come to you. Talk to me about Liverpool just playing at this awful pace and that's been the demise of Liverpool, by the way. It's never the case of the opposition being incredible. It's us moving the ball slow.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes back to the point I was making earlier about the only thing that's changed from last season is the centre-backs. So, and the style of centre-back that we've now got means that we cannot, we just can't play the same style to the same extent anyway. And it's really slowed us down a lot because we're never kind of getting out when teams are trying to press us up, press us quite high. Our centre backs haven't got the quality on the ball to do what Van Dijk and Gomez do, and it really does make everything harder for us to, you know, to pass quickly, everything. So yeah, there is a big problem there. We're getting there. I've seen little improvements. Like I thought the Arsenal game was a very good sign of us starting to get a bit of confidence back, where we didn't panic when the goals weren't going in the first half, and we just kept on going and kept knocking on the door, and the goal was eventually coming, and that was kind of reminiscent of Liverpool last season.
And where the pace in the Leipzig game was really decent as well, because they play that way as well, you know? So
yeah, there were flaws in the Leipzig game, obviously, where, you know, we gave some really gilt-edged chances away.
We were lucky,
Yeah, but it's... You know, we're a wounded animal. You know, this season we are champions of England, and teams are playing against Liverpool as if it's their cup final. They are playing against the champions, and there's no two ways about it. They want to leave one on the champions, and they're all up in their game incredibly to play against us. And as soon as they saw that we had a bit of a fragility there, and they found that there was a confidence issue and missing the best defender in the world. It was inevitable, I suppose. And, you know, everyone's knackered. COVID is an absolute shit show and it's depressing everyone. There's no people in the ground supporting us. You know, we've been through all of this. It's horrible to watch. And I just cannot wait until fans are back in the ground just because it does feel kind of soulless at the moment. And it's always going to have an effect on players. I don't care what anyone says. I think the stats alone prove this, that there's been more away wins this season than ever before, it seems. You know, the home records of a lot of teams have reduced a hell of a lot, and that's because of the lack of supporters in the stadium. So it seems, I know it's a small sample size because it's the first time it's ever happened, but it seems clear that that has had a big impact. And Liverpool, as a team who I said earlier, kind of likes to ride on a crest of a wave and really utilise the momentum a crowd can give you, it's really been, you know, a big kick in the bollocks for this Liverpool team this season, being without such a fantastic set of supporters. So, yeah, fingers crossed by the end of the season, I've heard we might be able to start getting up to 10,000 back by the last fixtures. That would be absolutely fantastic if it was the case.
Absolutely. And John, I've not heard you say anything about the supporters. I want to hear your thoughts on this because I think it's very important. I think, you know, people always talk about and feel like, oh, the atmosphere is an absolute myth. Well, it's a soulless place right now. And it just goes to show that the supporters do make a massive difference. Jurgen Klopp spoke about it. Pip spoke about it. Sam spoke about it. I think we all know what the supporters do. It's like a bounce off energy. Jurgen Klopp fist pumping the crowd and them screaming back. And every, you know, I just remember, and I spoke about this on Euro Incision. The importance of supporters. I mean, we've had so many magical nights at Anfield, you know, the Barcelona game that you kind of spoke about there. And for me, the quarter final against Man City, the season that we didn't win it. And I remember being sat in the cop and we were just singing, we were booing, we were jeering their players. We were forcing them into mistakes. We were making them make some really, really ridiculous decisions. And I want to get your thoughts in terms of how big of a miss that is, because certainly for a club like Liverpool, I think it's, I want to hear your thoughts on it, because I think it has been one of the big contributors this season.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. Imagine today's game with a full house. You know, they were time wasting. They were rolling around on the floor.
Yep.
The keeper was holding the ball for a huge... If I'm a Liverpool player, I am frustrated. I am disheartened by the lack of engagement from the other team. And if the audience are there, the public are there, they are screaming and shouting and haranguing that side to get... And the referee, you haven't got that. You've got, you know, Milner coming over and complaining about the time the keepers get... There must have been four or five occasions during this match where I just felt it had gone flat. Even the VAR decision. Look, they get a goal that gets them back into the game. It's Bobby, and he hardly celebrated it. If you've got a crowd there, they erupt. It goes ballistic. The amount of time that the VAR decision takes is jeered. It's complained about. Mm-hmm. It becomes more real. And then when it's, you know, when the goal is overturned, I think that sense of injustice that the crowd feel feeds back into the players, that then gives them the momentum and the enthusiasm to go out and right that wrong. These guys went off at halftime. Yep, the referee and VAR had overturned it. It was a really poor decision, I think, and they obviously will feel gutted. But it's not like they feel that passion to really go out there and write it, because they've got, you know, 50,000 people behind them yelling them on. So I cannot imagine what it is like to play, having won the title for first time in 30 years, to not have that celebration, to not be heralded as champions, and for when you're playing against an opposition that are last and don't, you know, really trying to dog it out and use every trick in the book, that you haven't got an audience, a crowd to get on their back. We miss it massively.
We absolutely do. And you know what? You spoke about VAR there, and you know what? I'm not even going to come to both of you. I just want a full-on like chat about this, because it is getting ridiculous. It's getting really, really stupid. That goal, I mean, I actually seen a tweet actually from Simon Brundage, and I'm going to read it out because I think it's brilliant. Just like last season and the nonsense VAR decision on Bobby's armpit, we came back from 1-0 to beat these filthy diving Summers, talk to me about that one, because it is literally a deja vu, but the only thing was that game was actually played at a really good pace, and I thought Liverpool played really well that game. VAR, what is going on with us? As soon as, I mean, the lines looked all legit, both of you, the lines looked completely legit, everyone looked onside, and then all of a sudden they decide, no, hang on a minute, an armpit's offside. I literally now, I mean, I've spoken to Sam about this. John, please do chime in. Let's talk about this. I'm at this stage in my life right now where I watch football, but I do not understand the rules.
No, exactly. I must admit, my whole... I haven't been to the ground since the Napoli game in the Champions League when Alisson saved us in the last minutes, because I'm, you know, I'm in Sweden. And so for me, my whole experience is through the TV or through the streams. And I have to say that football as a sport has changed so fundamentally. I cannot celebrate. I have to wait those couple of minutes until...
Awful, isn't it?
It has changed things. I've been heartbroken by the injustice of some decisions that have been made over the years that I've been supporting this club. But I've accepted that that is the nature of the game. You cannot have an absolute, definite, concrete, this... some of the guys were posting on Twitter, the technology doesn't even keep up with the reality. The frame rate of filming is going to lag behind. So when you've got someone in a cabin, porter cabin, wherever, drawing lines as if they're a pedantic teacher, you know, demonstrating some particular point, yeah, it might be adding to the drama of what's going on, but it takes away the romance of football. You know, Bobby Firmino, someone that we want to get back into scoring and being our Bobby, gets that important goal. The crowd aren't there. But then we get VAR that ruins it even further. Even if it is the correct decision, and I don't think it was, even if it's the correct decision, to just the whole process of those number of minutes that it drags on, is it, isn't it, is it, isn't it, this is not the game. And I don't really think the legitimacy of a decision is worth losing the romance, the intensity, the wonder of those goals. Sure, sometimes decisions go against you, but the whole process of VAR has sucked the romance, the passion out of the game. And for me, every time something goes in, I wait.
Would you scrap it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I'm at that stage. For me, the technology isn't wrong. It's the people then decide to give it the nod that are problematic. So I have an issue with them, because it has literally become so, so, so tedious. Sam, I mean, where were you when that happened? I mean, soon as they started drawing lines, I know you probably looked at that and thought, this is getting ruled off, because you and I have been here for so long and we've been doing this show, and you probably thought, oh my God,
yeah,
this is not looking good.
Same as John, right? I've been so much more reserved with celebrations and letting myself enjoy a goal, because you're just waiting to have it taken away from you. And I had a rare moment of letting myself celebrate the goal today with Firmino, but I had a little nagging doubt in the back of my mind, thinking when that ball came through to Jota, he would have been pretty close to offside. So I then sat back down and went, oh, you know what? This is going to be disallowed. But I don't know if you've seen Peter Moore's tweet on... about this, but he put a little tweet about this, and I thought it was quite well put to kind of sum up the flaw in this system. He says, using 2D visual assets to make a 3D decision, camera is perpendicular to the action by a good 8 meters. Lines drawn too thickly to determine millimeter wide decisions. Arbitrary data points, exact moment the ball is played. Joy of a goal replaced by the wait for the deployment of technology. And yeah, that's the bit that pisses me off, right? Is if they're going to do VAR for offside, they need to change something, because the problem with offside is there's so many moving parts. They're comparing it all the time on the Sky coverage to goal line technology and say, well, that's good, so why is everyone complaining about offside? Well, the difference is the line never moves. So that's always accurate. That's the point. That the problem we have with offside is there's players moving different directions quite often. The angles of their bodies are different. And there's actual people choosing where they draw the line from. So like today, they're drawing it from Jota's elbow, it seems, when you can't score from an elbow. They need to change something so that these types of decisions are taken out of it completely. You know, I think they need to give a bit more benefit of the doubt to attackers, so only clear offsides are given. I haven't got the answer because I know it is a tricky thing to do, and that's the reason why we're having so many problems. But personally, I wouldn't remove technology. I think it's the problem we have mostly is they need to seriously tweak the offside part of it because it's not really fit for purpose for football. So that's something they can change. But generally, my biggest problem is the incompetency of the people running it. And the, some of the decisions we've had this season has been, we've had this discussion before. I started thinking I was going crazy because I was starting to do conspiracy theories and stuff and saying they're up against us and all this. But when you see, like, for example, Man United the other day against Brighton and Welbeck's clean through on goal and Maguire just kicks it, you know, pulls him back when he's about to score the equaliser in the box, clear penalty, red card, everything, and they give nothing. And then Liverpool are getting penalties given against them, against Welbeck, funnily enough. Robertson kicked the ball away and he caught Welbeck. Welbeck walked for three steps and then went down and they give a penalty. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what the hell is going on? It's this serious lack of consistency out there that is the biggest problem for me. So until they kind of, I think miking up, we've said this before, but I'm a massive rugby fan, right? They've been doing this for years. They need to make them more accountable for their decisions because they can just hide there in their little dungeons, checking decisions and just disallowing goals, laughing, haha, I don't like Liverpool, that's gone. Well, you know, if we hear their decisions and their discussions with the referee, talking it out, sometimes you're more likely to accept the decision if you hear their reason for it.
Yeah.
And also, if they're heard on camera live, then they've got to own their own decision and they can't hide behind anything and just make an easy decision because that's the one they want to do. So I think miking them up is going to make them have to sharpen up with their decisions and make them a lot more accountable. So for me, it's just training of the referees needs to be better because they're obviously not doing a great job. Some of these decisions are blatantly obvious. The bloody Man City one in the Champions League the other day, I just don't understand how they allowed that to happen, disallowing Bellingham's goal, for example. They say the whistle blew. He was in front of an open goal with no defenders around him when the whistle blew, type of thing, you know? So, yeah, that's for me the biggest problem. VAR, I think they've opened the Pandora's box now. You're never, ever going to close it now. I think it's here to stay. It's a case of fixing things now. And I think the most important thing is to make some clear changes to the offside part of things so that there's a bit more advantage for the attacking side. You know, not an incredible amount like Wenger's suggesting. I think it'll be ridiculous and then there'll be players, you know, taking advantage of it. But they need to do something so we can bring back the joy of celebrating goals where it's borderline, you know, it's still a goal and we can still enjoy the game.
I think if I could just sort of come back to you there, I think it's going to come down to the way that the audience, the crowd react, because of course there's so much money in the game. And I think if there is such a level of dissatisfaction of what's happening in the ground, but also you can see it on social media, so many people, you know, posting out, I've had enough of the game, et cetera, et cetera. I think the amount of money in the game that they do have to relook at this. I mean, even the discussion across the globe, we seem to, you know, the British football organization in the UK seems to be doing something completely different to what's happening in Europe. I felt that if this had been a Champions League game, that the goal would have stood. I don't see them pulling that up. That was my immediate thought, that this is the kind of decision that happens in the Premier League.
It's a Premier League anxiety VAR stuff, isn't it? That's what it is. It's in the, you're absolutely spot on. In Champions League, I've not seen many clangers bar the the Bellingham goal that Sam's talking about. Aside from that, it's been pretty smooth sailing. And in Europe, it looks pretty decent. It's just us and our referees who are failing to get the luxury of a replay and still manage to cock things up.
The guy that reffed the match the other night, I didn't think he did a good job, but he owned it completely. I mean, he completely believed 100% in what he was doing. I got that impression that, you know, if he was going to make a decision, he didn't care what anyone else, he was making that decision. The guy today, it's almost like he's waiting for the VR to come in. There's a kind of a hesitancy that you see in the Premier League. And it's like when even with the linesman's decisions, they let the game go on. And then they can just pull it back to, oh, well, we'll check at VAR. I think the other thing we needed to say today was that after the offside, you know what, we had nearly a minute. How many touches of the ball after that? You know, it sort of went on and on and on. And this is where I feel it. It spoils the game. I sound like a curmudgeon. Yeah. But I think there is a distinct difference between how it is implemented in European matches compared to the Premier League.
No, I think you're spot on. And you know what? I've had enough. And something that John alluded to as well, I think having a full house there as well and, you know, hearing supporters boo and jeer, I think that makes the referees brick it a little as well. You know, and I feel like, the fans, and they will have some kind of sway. And at the moment, like we've said, I think the referees are just getting a free pass on everything, from the supporters, from, you know, not being mic'd up, no accountability, nothing. They get to hide. And, you know, it's just leaving a real, real bitter taste in the mouth, and no one's enjoying this at all. And I think as soon as we go to some kind of normality, I feel like there might be a bit more, let's just say, I'd say they're careless right now. I think they'll think twice about it when the fans are on their backs as well. So, you know, hopefully we go to some kind of normality, and I do think VAR is here to stay. I just wish we just implement it better. But guys, let's talk about, of course, the worst time for everything to happen as well, right before half time. We come out, and I guess what I want to talk about is the thing that really kind of impressed me was Liverpool were searching for the goal, and, you know, heads didn't drop. And I think that was huge. And, Sam, I'll come to you on this one, because Mo Salah, that man, I am so glad we have him, because if there's any inspiration to, you know, in terms of attack, it's him.
He just keeps on going, doesn't he? He is relentless. I think he's been our most consistent performer. Just he's always at it. I know, you know, he can give the ball away and whatever. He's trying to take people on. He's trying to do difficult things, but he's always there when we need him. He's, you know, where would we be this season without him keeping up his end of the bargain? Because, you know, he's been fantastic for us yet again. So it's just so nice to see us get a little bit of luck. You know, finally, a rebound has gone to a Liverpool player in the box, and we've had the chance to score it. The amount of times they were showing a stat at one point, I think we'd had something like 110 shots and scored one goal, was it, at home in 2021, something ridiculous like that. And the amount of times we've had shots, rebounds come out, and it's not going to our player. And today now, both of our goals, funnily enough, happen to be from a previous shot rebounding to us, and then we've kind of put the ball in the back of the net. So I think it had to happen eventually. You know, we've been grinding out a lot of games. We've, on the overall balance of play, been by far the better side quite often. But, you know, we know football isn't just about XG. It's, you know, it's about a lot more than that. But when you've got XG, like today, for example, XG 2.37 to us to 0.67 of Aston Villa, we've comprehensively beaten them today on the balance of play. But bloody hell, you know, they've ended up hitting the post at one point.
Yeah.
You know, it could so easily, that goes in, we're probably leaving with a 2-1 defeat again. And we're thinking, where the hell, that's how our luck's been this season. We've been losing games where we've been dominating them, and a lot of it's been down to really poor decision-making in the final third. And that's been more the problem than the defending. You know, to be fair to the guys that have come in, they've been doing a decent enough job. We haven't been conceding goal after goal in most games. It's been the attacking point that's been the problem. So, yeah, just the one person who hasn't been letting us down this season, though, is Mo Salah. And he just, that goal was so, so important for us today. But I don't know about you, Nina. I just want to ask what your thoughts of. I really thought we were poor for about 20-odd minutes after we scored that goal.
We completely dropped.
Oh, God. Like, you know, you thought, right, goal's in now. We had, like, one more attack and we gave the ball away. And then we had about 20 minutes where we didn't threaten them whatsoever. And I was like, oh, where's it gone again? And we really lost our way. So I don't know what you guys thought about that then after the goal, our reaction to going, scoring the equaliser and not really pressing on to try and get the winner.
I'm going to come to John with this because I'm going to throw him with a parallel as well. I'm going to go back to the Real Madrid game. We were really bad, but then we came out in the second half quite aggressive. And, you know, we were only good for like the first, I'd say 10-15 minutes of the second half of the Real Madrid game. We get a goal back, it's 2-1, we have a lifeline and we completely fall off the cliff again. And that the third goal we conceded made me the most angriest because we literally just threw it away again. And I want to get your thoughts in terms of same kind of principle in the sense that we get an equaliser, we should push on from here and we should kick on and we don't, you know, increase the gears.
No, exactly. I think last season, if we got one goal, we could hold that lead. We were superb. We were almost like one of those German teams of the 70s that could just keep the ball, or the Italian teams of the 70s and 80s that could just keep the ball and grind it out. But now it's almost like if we don't get that first goal and then the second goal, their heads go. And I almost felt like with today's match, when we got the goal, when Salah scored, as you rightly said, both of you, they lost their heads. It was almost like the goal then gave, it sort of encouraged Villa back into the game and we let the game slide. And I think it's only that sense of the time, the clock ticking that drags us forward. One of the things that I was thinking while Sam was talking about Salah, and I've been thinking so much about psychology of it myself, is, and to go back to where we started really with how can we best help Sadio Mane. Mo Salah is an absolute winner. And no matter what, even when things are going against him, he doesn't really give a shit and he's going to score. You know, Mo Salah is convinced that he's going to score. Michael Owen had that actually. But then there were players like Emil Heskey, who scored, was a fantastic striker, and then something got in his head and he struggled to score. Fowler went through a stage too, actually, where, you know, he had barren stage. And it's almost like if Salah could do anything, it would be to give some of that I don't give a shit to Mane, to give him that aggression, to give him that, because the fighters around Mo Salah, it's like, I don't know, there's something in the team psychologically that they seem to lose it. But the sense that for me today, the great standouts were Thiago getting into the box in those last minutes and thumping that ball at the keeper that the keeper then spills back and Trent buries. Was Trent, despite giving the ball away a few times, having a few, you know, he was not defensively great at times, but he still has that belief and goes on and buries that goal. And that's what I want to see more of. And I think that's what the squad need to do to be able to get those, the bit where they lose their heads after they score, they need to collectively drive forward, believing that we can win. It's that is missing in our performances. It's almost like they're aware of their fallibility, of the weaknesses that they have in the side. And they need to forget that, because Mo Salah can forget that. One of the most amazing things I've witnessed is, you know, standing on the Kop and hearing the stadium singing the Mo Salah song as he, you know, skips down the wing and buries a goal. I mean, and that to me, that the feeding of that attitude, that winner belief, is what we need through the side. And I saw green shoots of it today in Trent, in Thiago, and I hope that we take that forward.
Absolutely. You know what? It's not great, is it, when we're talking about this Liverpool team and, you know, they are the champions and they were so incredible last season. And we're sat here saying, hang on a minute. When a decision doesn't go that way, their heads wobble. When they equalise, their heads wobble. What is going to get this team clicking into gear? You know, you're sat there scratching your head. What is going on? Sam, I'll come to you. I mean, it has been a hot minute since Liverpool have scored in injury time.
Oh, God. And it was really reminiscent of, there's been a few Gerrard goals quite similar to that, isn't there? Where he's just absolutely smashed it in from the edge of the box.
Yeah.
And we know Trent's got that in his locker. And I just want to say I'm so, so happy for Trent. You know, he's had a lot of criticism in the media. He's been dropped from England duty when some of the players in that team
facing disgusting abuse as well.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that. But, you know, some of the players in the England team aren't fit to lace his boots. And he's being deemed the worst right back in the league and stuff by people. You know, people are mad. What was he, 22 now?
Yep.
I think he's only 22. It's incredible. He's a Premier League and Champions League winner already at the age of 22. He's been churning out 20 assists a season and things. It's from right back. It's unbelievable that guy it was such a key part of our attacking force last 3 years, really. He's been a massive, massive part of why Liverpool have been so incredibly good over the last 3 years. So, you know, young players always have ups and downs, and, you know, he has made mistakes. Obviously, he's made some poor defensive errors. He's been giving the ball away and things, but the team has been poor. The team has been giving the ball away. It's not just him. It's been everyone. And he's 22 years of age. He shouldn't be expected to have to carry the team all the time. You know, there's some other boys on the pitch there who are 30 plus, who are old heads and making the same mistake. So for them to all kind of pinpoint it all onto Trent, because he's an easy target, because he seems to be, you know, just a youngster, and they just think they'll just throw it at him and write him off at the age of 22 is just bonkers for me. And he's got the potential to be one of our greatest ever players if he keeps going. You know, he's got another 10 plus years at Liverpool, fingers crossed, and he's going to be an absolute legend for us. I'm absolutely convinced of it. So that goal today, the biggest goal we've scored in 2021, and I couldn't have picked a better player for that goal to go to. And the fact that it was in the 90th minute as well, it's something, as you said, Nina, we haven't been doing recently. Like last season, we were mentality monsters and all this, and we'd never give up and we'd find a way to win. And this season, in the second half of the season anyway, in 2021, we've just been finding a way to lose when it seems easier to win when we're in control of games. So, yeah, let's just hope this is a massive turning point for us. It's got to be now. You know, we can see we're still a quality team. There's still the same players there. We're only missing a couple of guys now. So it shouldn't be completely going from, you know, win every game to lose every game just by missing Van Dijk and Gomez. You know, we should be doing better. So this hopefully now is going to be the catalyst for a bit of an increase in form of the team in general. But as we touched on earlier, some players seem to be quite confidence-based. Like Mane seems to be such a nice guy, Mane. He seems to be really affected when things go wrong for him. Whereas I think Salah might be a bit mentally stronger and a bit more ruthless and selfish maybe. So yeah, fingers crossed now this is going to be something that's going to be a turning point.
I just wanted to come back to Sam there. And you know, I think one of the points really what underlies what you're saying, Sam, is that how are absolute legends made? And in many respects, what we see with Trent, that goal today is within the context of a young player who we can see is phenomenally talented, who's won, you know, the greatest prizes in the game by the age of 22. Mm. And he personally has had a woeful season. He's not been great this season. It has been a very difficult experience for a young man. But in the same way that when Gerrard comes through, there are defining moments in Gerrard's career when he's a young guy, when he makes bad decisions. You know, he commits, he gets sent off. He does badly against Everton. There are things that go on to make him the player he becomes, the drive. And I think when Trent scored today, and there's a brilliant thing on his Twitter stream, he posted at, you know, sort of half an hour ago with a picture of himself kissing the badge, you know, chest puffed out. Are you not entertained with it, you know, flexing his muscle?
I might watch Gladiator tonight.
Yeah. And I just thought, and I don't like drawing comparisons between players, but it made me think this is a legend in the making moment. Mm. The man within the context of, you know, he's responsible for one of the big mistakes against Madrid the other night. And I'm sure he went home and was absolutely gutted, you know, for the fans, for the team, for everything he clearly believes in. And what does he do 3-4 days later? We're playing in a game where we're robbed of an equaliser, where things go against us. And he comes up right at the death and absolutely buries that ball. And okay, we're not in the ground to celebrate it. But looking back, you know, is this the moment where Trent announces himself as, I'm the kind of player that no matter what, I can help drag the team forward, which is what Gerrard, you know, really made Gerrard who he was, yeah. Why he gets the captaincy at such a young age. And you can see that in the same way that Salah is, you know, viciously ambitious, so is Trent. And you could see that today.
And mental strength as well with the week that he's had as well. You know, you know, for me, that goal, I mean, like you said, you know, Liverpool have scored some iconic goals, right? And for me, like, that was like a bread and butter kind of iconic goal against a nothing kind of team. First of all, it was kind of scrappy, you know, the ricochet from Thiago that ends up to Trent's feet. He absolutely smashes it. It's in the dying minutes. It had to be precise. It was in front of a cop, albeit an empty cop, and it was a Scouser that did it.
It's perfect, exactly. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's one of those things that will come back on the reels, you know, that people will watch. I think it's one of those, okay, no, this is a season and not a great season. Well, we could still win the Champions League, but we, you know, it's not been a great experience, but that was a great moment of this season. It keeps us in it. It keeps us still believing. You know, I don't know what the other results are going to be, you know, this, but it keeps us in it. And I think that's special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? And it kind of gives so much confidence for us as supporters, knowing that, hang on a minute, we don't have to walk the ball into the net. We've got this guy that can actually smash it. And he probably fancy himself against Real Madrid as well, because, you know, they are quite a defensive team and we need that kind of player that can actually, you know, try to have a shot, because I feel like we're guilty of that as well. We tend to try to walk the ball into the net against a Real Madrid team who's going to be quite defensively disciplined. They've got, you know, a two-goal cushion. You're going to need players who dare and fancy themselves to, you know, who knows, Trent trying to recreate the Olympiacos moments in the modern day game. You know, we need that. We need it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think unlike, you know, the Coutinhos, even Gerrard, one of the things that Trent has is that he plays phenomenal ball. He's very, very generous as a player. You know, he's got a lot of assists under his belt. And I think that's, you know, that's what's so fantastic about him, is that you can see. Yeah, yeah, they're both things there.
Yeah. Absolutely right, guys. I think we've come to the end of the pod. Is there anything that you'd want to share on the pod? John, this is our closure bit. Basically, you get whatever you need to say off your chest and you're done with it. Sam, anything that we've not kind of mentioned that you feel needs mentioning?
Just I don't know about you guys. It was a bit bizarre. I had a moment, Nina. When Trent scored that goal, it really was 4 months of built-up frustration for me that just came out, and I kind of almost got emotional when he scored it. And it's just like a win in the Premier League when it's not really achieved much. But for me, it just felt like an absolute relief that we've been going through this shitty time. You know, we've touched on this a lot. Working from home, I am, so I'm in the house all the time. The only thing I've got to entertain me at the moment is sport, and it's been going really, really poorly for Liverpool. So I've been putting way too much kind of importance on Liverpool victories to be, you know, the deciding factor in my happiness on a weekend. That's really not a healthy decision when we've been playing like we have been. So when that goal went in, I went absolutely ballistic. I'm pretty sure I smashed the windows with my voice. It went so high. My heart was beating out my chest, and I was like shaking for 5 minutes after the win as well. So okay. I don't know if you guys get quite as worked up over football as I do, but we've discussed it plenty of times, Nina, where my Apple Watch has been going off saying my heart rate is asking me if I'm doing a workout and stuff sometimes when I'm just watching Liverpool play. So so important to get that win today. I just wanted to emphasise that it's massive for Liverpool, but it's massive for me, and I think it's massive for a lot of Liverpool fans out there at the moment who have been having a bit of a shitty time with COVID and putting way too much emphasis on sport to bring them happiness. So I think this is something that's going to give a lot of people a really big lift. And, you know, Real Madrid coming up Wednesday now, 2-0 win puts us through to the next round. You know, it's not impossible. So I think it's something they need to focus on. They don't have to go gung-ho. It's more important almost not to concede a goal. And, you know, even if it's still 0-0 going into the last half an hour, if we nick a goal, you know, we could be going through to the next round. And if that does happen, that goal by Trent will be looked back as the catalyst for that recovery and maybe as the catalyst for a really good end to the season, fingers crossed.
Absolutely, absolutely. I loved everything what you said. I think a lot of people are putting a lot of emphasis on Liverpool. I don't think it's just yourself. And, you know, I think everyone went mad at that goal because to me, that was a typical vintage Liverpool kind of winner, you know, to score in such a dramatic fashion. So I think everyone felt it. I think you'd have to check your pulse otherwise. For me as well, just getting that win at Anfield, so huge, certainly against a massive team like Real Madrid coming as well. John, anything you'd like to get off your chest? And then we can move on to Man of the Match.
I think the overriding thing I came away from with this is that these guys clearly want it for themselves and for us. Wednesday night was a very, very poor performance, and they got a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always the gurgle of noise where, oh, I've given up on this season. I'm unhappy with this and I'm unhappy with that. These guys, you know, they know when they don't perform well and they want to right that. And I think that the passion, the determination in spite of VAR's determination to rain on our parade, you know, I think that's admirable. And no matter what happens against Madrid, I think it's important to recognize that they will do everything that they can to get it across the line, to get us, like, you know, to get us through to the next round. And I was proud of them today because they could have easily put their heads down, and decisions could have gone them, and that could have been the talk. Even Klopp himself, you know, he was not having a good time. You could see that, and you could see how much it meant to him when the goal goes in at the end. He even forgets to go and congratulate the other manager and sort of has to double back and sort of he gets carried away in the emotion. So I think that was the only other thing that I wanted to say.
Yeah, even so, a little chest bump from him. Right, we're going to go to Man of the Match, Steve Pizza. Man of the Match, Nina, or did I miss it? Surely Trent, but for the record. So, John, I'll come to you first. Who was your Man of the Match?
Oh, that was a toughie. I saw Steve's message there. Firmino. I think he played so well in his link-up play, his determination. I thought he looked a bit slimmer than of late. And I thought he really made the difference. He brought the cohesion into our play. Even that this goal was scored after he was off the pitch, I thought he brought something back to the side that we clearly missed the other night. And I think he was subbed because he will be starting against Madrid. He was fantastic. Yeah. Trent, you know, for the passion, the emotion, everything was wonderful. But I didn't think his defensive performance was great throughout. So Firmino was the man of the match. But Trent was special.
I like that shout and I like the reasoning, and I have to agree. I felt like he set the tone and the tempo in terms of how we went out and how we attacked and his link up play. And, you know, just, I think that touch as well, where even the commentator just went, oof, you know, like his control, he's just unreal. He's such a smart player. Sam, what about you? Who's your man of the match? I mean, it wasn't a great Liverpool performance. I think we all know that. I think we're just so, you know, just so happy with the win, but go with your man of the match.
Yeah, the weird thing is it could have been a very good Liverpool performance today. We were, it's very fine margins in top level sport, isn't it? Where a goalkeeping error, a disallowed goal, some really poor finishing. You know, we could have easily gone away with quite a comfortable victory today. So it's a bit of a strange one, but I think it's obviously confidence related. Salah, obviously, big contribution scoring early. I thought Fabinho is always fantastic. I think it's so important having him in midfield. And even when he went back in defence, you know, he made some important stops there as well. But I think I'm going to have to join the bandwagon. I think Firmino might just be my favourite player. I give him man of the match quite a bit when some people seem to criticise him a lot. But there's a moment in the game today where he just turned and ran, I think it was 20, 30 yards with the ball. And it didn't look like he was going that fast, but no one could keep up with him. And when Bobby's firing, Liverpool are Liverpool again. And there were moments today, you know, it wasn't a 90-minute performance, don't get me wrong, but there were moments today where he looked far sharper than any other player we had on the pitch. You know, he received the ball in really, really tight areas, managed to turn and get us on the attack. And that's something we've really struggled with. And, you know, we were touching on Wijnaldum and things, struggling in midfield. Real Madrid, we desperately missed Firmino, I thought. The first half where we created 0xG, we couldn't hold the ball up whatsoever. So, yeah, for me, I thought that there's clear signs that Firmino, a streamlined Firmino with his shorter hair. I know, Nina, you love talking about hair. Maybe that's why John thought he looked a bit slimmer with his shorter haircut. But, yeah, for me, Firmino, man of the match for Liverpool today, and really happy to see him back, and fingers crossed starting against Madrid with a great performance.
Absolutely, yeah. For me, it was Bobby Firmino as well. I thought he was absolutely incredible, and it's quite rare that, you know, we're giving it to somebody that didn't do the full 90 minutes as well. So, you know, Roberto Firmino breaking records there. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all the people that joined us live. A massive thank you to Pip and Yona for calling in. Really appreciate it. A massive thank you to these two excellent dudes. But before I let them go, they will give you some plugs on where you can find them on Twitter. John, I'll come to you first. Where can people find you on Twitter, and is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, I just like to plug the Nina Kauser show. It was a pleasure to be on the show again, and I'm sure when you put a tweet out, it will have my Twitter handle or whatever it's called these days in the post. So if you want to talk Liverpool with me, do at me on Twitter.
Yeah, do follow at John Buskell on Twitter. He is an incredible, awesome follow. So insightful as well, as you've heard, very measured. And Sam, over to you. What would you like to plug, and where can people find you and more of your silliness on Twitter?
Right, I'd like to plug the next Nina Kauser show on week Monday, because Liverpool are going to be beating Leeds United that night, and you'll have John back on.
No, let me get a time out on that one. I'm actually not hosting that one. I've got issues. Guy Drinkle. So if you want to get on with Guy Drinkle, drop it. Yeah, wow. Guy Drinkle. Yeah, subbing him in.
Yeah, that's madness. Well, yeah. Well, that's kind of spoiling my joke now. But yeah, John will be on when we win. I'm sure you'll force him to come on now, because that's the rule. And it'll be his fault if we don't win then, because he hasn't come on. So, yes. So just to plug this show, I think, is a good shout. And also, if you want to have a chat on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Sambo Evans.
Yeah, people don't know this, but I've already emailed John Buskell the contract. I'm doing a Newcastle Pardew thing here. 8 years, tied down, that's it. Done and dusted.
Oh, yes. We got Pardew on.
Yeah, but I have a feeling that John Buskell will give me a much better return. I am confident. I am so confident. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Like you've just heard there, I will not be hosting the Leeds United post-match show, but the awesome Guy Drinkle will. I'll be back after that. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, look after yourselves, and enjoy that. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. Until next time, up the Reds.
Podcast Network.